Hello, I'm Kate Purcell, and I'm a professor at the Institute for Employment Research. I've been working here off and on since 1986, and I do this as a sociologist because I really enjoy working on an interdisciplinary basis with colleagues who've got a very different intellectual background. Our work, on the whole, at the Institute involves independent investigations of employment policy-related issues. Since the 1960s, governments in this country, as in most countries around the world, have developed employment, educational and training policies and programs designed to maintain international competitiveness in global markets for products and services. The expansion of higher education and widening of access to higher education have been key components of these policies, driven by the assumptions that enabling a higher proportion of the population to benefit from higher education will produce a more highly skilled and innovative workforce. The further assumptions are that this will lead to greater equality of opportunity and it will promote higher economic performance and productivity. The social consequences of these policies have been dramatic. 30 years ago, less than 10% of school leavers went on to higher education, while in recent years, close to half the 18 to 21-year-old population have done so, and they've done that along with adult returners who've been encouraged to take advantage of second-chance education that they missed out on when they left school. This means that not only the graduate labour market, but the labour market as a whole has changed very radically. At the same time, the perception of higher education has changed gradually from being primarily an opportunity for scholarship and learning that, incidentally, tended to lead to well-rewarded, relatively good career opportunities, to become seen much more as an opportunity to develop employability skills, to invest in the likelihood that you would get a good job at the end of it, in which students and their families have increasingly been encouraged and required to invest in. All of this has meant that the relationship between higher education expansion, occupational change, and access to opportunity has moved from the periphery to the core of employment research. There's an enormous amount of media interest in the impact of these policy changes and the growth of graduate employment. There's been a great deal of debate among the stakeholder community, policymakers, employers, higher education providers, student organisations and students themselves, about how far graduates meet the needs of industry and whether or not higher education expansion has led to over-education or underemployment of graduates. But there's been very little comprehensive independent research to produce hard evidence about what's actually been happening as a result of higher education expansion. We've been conducting interdisciplinary research at the Institute on the relationship between higher education and employment, or what we used to think about as a graduate labour market, since the formation of the IER. Since 1989, we've conducted a large number of surveys, tracking studies that involved contacting cohorts of graduates via the universities and colleges they'd studied at to investigate their early career trajectories. In most cases, we contacted them several years after they'd completed their courses and asked them what they'd been doing since they graduated. The biggest of these studies were large-scale UK sample surveys of the 1995 and 1999 graduating cohorts from 38 UK higher education institutions that were representative of the full spectrum of undergraduate courses offered in the UK at the time. In the case of the 1995 cohort, we went back to them again 7 years after they'd graduated, and in the case of a small subsample of these, we went back 10 years on to look particularly at high-flying female graduates who had aspired to have a very successful, continuous career, to see how far they'd been able to achieve this. You can read about the findings from these studies on our website. Essentially, we found significant differences in both the career trajectories and outcomes of graduates according to the subjects they'd studied, the kinds of universities or colleges they'd attended, and specific demographic characteristics. We found interesting and somewhat dispiriting differences in their access to opportunities and income according to gender and to age. But also, we found interesting and unexpected differences in the choices that they'd made and the values that they held about their ambitions and aspirations according to those same two key variables. These studies had a significant impact on how higher education statistics subsequently have been collected. And now, as well as the first destination survey conducted by the Higher Education Statistics Agency, which tracks all students according to some very basic dimensions 6 months after they've graduated, there now has been conducted for several years a longitudinal Delhi study, which goes back again to these graduates 3.5 years after they've graduated. We also had unexpected findings. Despite the very significant increase in the numbers of graduates entering the labour market at the turn of the century, compared in their sheer numbers and the proportion of the age groups that they represented to previous generations, there was very little evidence of graduate underemployment. We collected full work histories from graduation to the survey dates, and we asked respondents for each period of employment whether the jobs they had done had required a degree, whether they'd been required to use their graduate skills and knowledge, and we asked how far they considered their current jobs to be appropriate for somebody with their skills and qualifications. We found differences in the rates at which graduates with different types of degree had access to appropriate graduate jobs, but this was complicated by the increasing postponement of career developments by members of the generation being studied. Increasing numbers of students during that period were taking gap years before they started to embark on serious career search. But by 3 to 4 years after graduation, we found that the majority were in jobs that, both objectively in terms of their occupational classification and subjectively in terms of their own evaluation of the quality of the job, appeared to indicate successful graduate labour market integration. Furthermore, the earnings they reported and the average rates of earnings increase between first job after graduation and earnings at the survey point, both 3 to 4 or 7 years on, indicated that qualifications and presumably the greater productivity or performance that their higher education enabled them to contribute were being recognised and rewarded by employers. But these graduates completed their studies in the mid-1990s, having studied under very different conditions to those experienced by the most recent cohorts of students. They had substantially lower levels of debts, and they entered a very different labour market. How far have things changed since then? This brings me to the most exciting of the research projects in this area, the FutureTrack Longitudinal Census Study. In this one, we approached all those who applied to enter higher education in the UK to full-time undergraduate courses in 2005-06. The UK has, until recently, had virtually an exclusively publicly provided higher education system, for which applications to all higher education institutions are processed centrally in partnership with the higher education institutions concerned by UCAS, the Universities and Colleges Application Service. This meant that UCAS, on our behalf, was able to send an email to all applicants inviting them to participate in the first of a series of online surveys simply by clicking on a link and accessing a questionnaire. At this first sweep of the survey, over 130,000 applicants responded, answering questions about why they'd decided to proceed to higher education, why they'd chosen the courses and universities they'd hoped to study at, what careers information and guidance they'd had access to, and a wide range of questions about their attitudes and aspirations. They were surveyed again subsequently a year later, and then again in spring and summer 2009, when many were approaching graduation, and particularly targeting those who were graduating in 2010, in spring and early summer of 2010. We are now, in late autumn 2011, conducting the Stage 4 survey to investigate how far these graduates have realised their ambitions so far. They've entered what has been painted by the media a very difficult graduate labour market. What kinds of career opportunities have they encountered? What's been the impact of student debt? Who has gone on to postgraduate study and why? How, with hindsight, do graduates evaluate their higher education experience? And what about the 2005-06 applicants who didn't go on to higher education and took a different route? How did their careers progress? How many went on to enter higher education after a break? Do they regret their decision not to proceed? In short, what can we learn from the experiences of this cohort, this very well-documented cohort, and what are the implications for those currently contemplating applying to enter higher education? Is it worth it? And what is a graduate job? This is something that we've been spending a great deal of time theorising about and looking at statistics to look at where graduates are employed and looking at the kinds of jobs that graduates do. And we hope by the end of this programme that we will have some very substantial findings which will enable us to unpack what's really a very big black box. A higher education theorist called Martin Trow, several years ago, pointed out that higher education is not a commodity, it's actually a process and needs to be understood in those terms. The graduate labour market is not a single labour market, it's a cluster of labour markets which overlaps with labour markets that can be accessed and have been accessed by people who haven't had the benefit of higher education. Hopefully, by the time we finish this project, we will have a very clear map of what higher education means in its different guises, what different kinds of educations there are within this big map of higher education. If you find this interesting, keep checking on the Future Track website and other social networking activities, because this study will produce the hardest evidence that can be made available about what has really been happening in the graduate labour market. Also, if you applied to enter higher education in 2005-06, whether or not you proceeded to university or college in autumn 2006, check your email boxes. And if you haven't received an online link to the Future Track survey, check out our website now and join the survey. We want to be as comprehensive and representative as possible to enable us to provide an accurate picture of the labour market and career realities facing graduates now.